Hello, welcome to Object Matters, the podcast of the Chow Chak Wing Museum at the University of Sydney. My name's Craig Barker. I'm an archaeologist and the head of public engagement for the museum. In Object Matters, each episode, I invite a guest in to talk about an object or a series of objects in the museum collection and to talk about their connections with it and their relationships. And I'm very, very thrilled this episode to be joined by Stephen Gagao. Stephen is a researcher for Paradisic, and Stephen is also one of the co-curators of a new exhibition at the Chow Chak Wing Museum called Pacific Views. So settle in while Stephen and I talk a bit about the Pacific and a bit about some really, really interesting photographs. Stephen, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Greg, for the opportunity.
Now, before we get to the nuts and bolts of talking about the exhibition and talking about these remarkable photos in the photographic album that you've selected, could you first talk a little bit about yourself and your background? How did you end up working with us at the Chow Chak Wing Museum?
Thank you, Greg. My background actually is engineering science.
Oh, is it really?
And business management. But after a corporate career and past industry experiences, I changed my focus of interest to community volunteering work, which led me to the social sciences space, hence that led me to research, archival and curatorial work, which I'm so fortunate enough to be with the university.
And then in terms of your own background, from where in the Pacific are your family from?
My cultural heritage, I am from New Britain Island in Papua New Guinea. I come from the Tolai tribe, or the Gunantuna, locally known. And I've moved to Australia, and I'm now in a diaspora community. And that's where I wanted to connect more with the culture, with the community, and basically promoting our identity in Australia.
How do members of the Pacifica community more generally respond to the idea of museum collections that are, I mean, I guess at least Sydney's relatively close to the Pacific, but certainly when you talk about European and American collections, these objects that have gone on long, long journeys away from their homeland and their culture, is there some degree of mistrust and distrust of museums, or have there been attempts that for communities to engage with those collections that have those colonial legacies?
That's one of the main focus of my role at Paradisic, and that is to basically reactivate and reconnect the communities, to kind of remind them that a lot of objects, artifacts have been taken away from the people. And it's about time that people sort of get together and look at museums. And although their grandfathers, their ancestors have been involved with the movements of museum items, it's just a way of educating our people that they need to get engaged in this process.
Yes.
Because at the moment, they just take it all. The white men took them away.
Yes.
And that sort of thing. So I'm trying to do the bridging gap between communities and academia or research so that they come to better understand and maybe embrace the past and try to sort of understand today and what we can do for the future.
Great. Well, I'm very keen to explore that concept with you a bit more as we go along. But you were talking about Paradisic. Could you talk about what Paradisic is as an organization? What are some of the things that Paradisic are attempting to achieve?
Well, Paradisic is a digital archive and known as the Pacific and Regional Archive for Digital Sources in Endangered Culture. So that's in short for Paradisic. And it was an innovative project that started in 2003 as a consortium between University of Sydney, University of Melbourne, and the ANU in Canberra. And the focus and the function there was to basically safeguard and preserve digital audio, visual records of languages, music, and oral histories from the Pacific Islands and many small cultures of the world that is represented in the archive.
Fascinating. And I'm assuming the archives are really quite large and continuing to grow?
It continues to grow. As we speak, there'll be nearly about 1,300 languages now at
wow.
the archive. It continues to grow, and our aim is to basically look at first the legacy recordings that has been done in the 50s, the 60s, and to capture them and preserve them, because analog tapes will no longer exist,
yes.
and we need to start digitizing. So one of the biggest tasks is digitizing them and then keeping them in copies for distribution and sharing with researchers and community.
Now, I believe you've brought along for us to listen to and our listeners to listen to one of the recordings, one of these legacy recordings. Could you explain the piece of music that we are about to hear?
The song that I selected is called Aperoveta from the South Coast central province of Papua New Guinea. This song is called A Prophet Song. It is a combination of Polynesian culture, Melanesian culture, so it has that exposure to colonization and missionization. So I hope you enjoy the song. It just talks about how the missionaries came to the central province of Papua New Guinea and basically introduced singing to prophets. So it's got a blend of traditional language, which is the Hirimotu, and it's got sort of the expressions to the prophets that they were kind of introduced as part of the culture of missionaries.
So that was beautiful, Stephen. Thank you for sharing that. One of the things that I want to talk to you about before we start talking about the album is the new exhibition at the Chow Chak Wing Museum that you are a co-curator of, Pacific Views. Could you talk our listeners through what the exhibition covers and what they will expect to see when they come in to visit the exhibition?
Thank you, Craig. The most important thing about the Pacific Views is it reflects the historical photography done during colonization. And we're trying to reflect and try to connect contemporary culture and Pacific Islanders of today to connect back to what it was and relate to that. So really, we're trying to combine three things here, the photography, the images, to poetry, because we need to reflect the voices and also the music and the songs of the Pacific. So it's, in a way, kind of holistic approach to how we view the Pacific from history to contemporary times.
So, but it's also a marrying of images with voices too, which is really quite lovely because we all love old photographs, but we can't hear the people speak. But this way, right, we're at least getting a sense of it. And that's then right, obviously providing a visual element to those amazing songs like the one we've just heard and the poetry as well, and that long tradition of poetry in the Pacific region. Right.
Well, you know, historically, traditionally, indigenous people always had storytelling as part of oral traditions. And poetry happens to be the written expression of it now. And our pioneers, I call them the sparks of literature started when they got exposed to how to write poetry.
Yes.
It was always in the lives of the people. So that's how they express themselves, their connection to the ancestral spirits, to the environment, to the way of life. It's a way of really reflecting what's in their lives out there. So the marrying of poetry to the images and with the songs that I've brought in from Paradisic will have messages in there that will basically reflect and bridge what has been the impact of colonization and the change that has happened and how we embrace it today and looking into the future.
And are there, within that tradition of oral storytelling and poetry, both in its original form and now in a written form post-colonization, are there common themes across languages and across islands, or is it quite localized that you'll get a very different tradition in one part of the Pacific from another?
Well, the Pacific has kind of three ethnic groups, the Polynesians, the Micronesians, and the Melanesian. And what I find is there's commonality.
Mm.
It's the Pacific way.
Yes.
And it's the informal way.
Yes.
And it's all about the concept of talanoa, which is a Fijian term about dialogue and sharing things, coming to conclusions to compromise on issues. They agree on the steps to take and what outcomes we get out of that. So it's common. The stories are common. The weaving of a basket or fishing or gardening. I see the Pacific as the similarity and the commonality is there.
And in terms of the photographs themselves, what are the time frames that they cover? You say that they're colonial period. Are we looking sort of mid-19th century right up until World War II?
Right. It's the late 19th century, which is like the late 1800 and early 1900s.
Yes.
So that'll be the ones that I'll be kind of focusing on is about 1927, 1928, around the early 20s.
Right.
Yes. So that is really when the colonizers actually moved in.
Yes.
Previous to that, for me, is traders or whalers or missionaries that they were coming in. But I think that's when things started picking up with, I would say, colonization and missionization.
Mm, right.
So that kind of overlaps because there were ideologies brought in, belief systems were brought in.
Yes.
And that kind of sort of made people to adjust their livelihood, their lifestyle, their concepts. But what's important is we are still maintaining traditional cultures, but trying to embrace what was introduced to us.
In terms of that adjustment, I mean, obviously, it probably did vary a little bit from different locations across the Pacific too, according to the particular local circumstances. But were there large elements of more traditional lifeways that were lost forever during that period, or was there a degree of adaptation and change?
For me, I look at it as adaptation. People have always been doing the way they live their lives traditionally. And adaptation was the introduction. In some places, it varied because it's how they approached the locals.
Yeah.
When the locals were embracing them, then it was a different story.
Yes.
It's the willingness to learn or to adjust. But the important thing is that some parts of the colonies, they were forced to do things that were not really part of what they wanted. Or
yes.
So there's some mixed approaches, but I'd say adaptation was and the change that people try to embrace as they move forward. But there's some good and bad. But at the end of the day, it's how people can modernize the way they live, still holding on to their traditional cultures.
In terms of the photographs we're going to be talking about today, the objects for this episode of Object Matters, we've got a set of photographic albums, the Pearson photographic albums. Could you explain to our listeners what these albums are? I mean, I think we can all visualise a photographic album, but talk a little bit more about these photographic albums and what drew you to them.
Thank you. The albums are Pearson albums that were taken by a banker of the Commonwealth Bank on New Britain Island, where I happen to come from. So that is the connection that I felt that I can relate to.
Yes.
And it was all done in 1927.
Right.
And that's where was my reference point with these photographs. A lot has not been written about a lot of these things, but I could kind of easily relate because I can... I know the geography.
Yeah,
I know
I recognize
landscapes and stuff. So... This, I must say, he did a terrific job in trying to capture what I see today of what it was.
Mm.
And it wide ranging from ecology, just the natural landscapes, the seascapes, the skyscapes, the beauty of the environment then, to how the introduction of the colonization came in with plantations, for instance.
Yes.
That was a major introduction to the change of lifestyle,
right,
because
right.
People were subsistence farmers.
Yes, yes.
And they lived there. And suddenly you got to earn the money out of what you do.
Yeah.
That was not the concept before.
Yeah.
So the range of photographs inspiring, and to me it's like it's priceless because it's something that
a snapshot
of the time. And 1927 happens to be when my dad was born, so it resonated with me that this is my dad's time, but I'm seeing it today.
I mean, you talk about being able to recognize landscapes and environments in the images. Are any of the people recognizable? Do you know who some of the individuals are? Or are they?
They are my father's generation, so I cannot basically confirm any faces. Although the features can be picked up,
yes,
that they are from this part, and there are different parts of the area that I come from that people look different. And I could tell, these guys are from the South Coast, or these are from the North Coast.
Yes.
I could tell today
that
has been carried on. So there's some connection with the past and the present.
Yeah. It's amazing to think that these people in the photographs are potentially people that your father were talking to and knew as he grew up.
And that's what excited me when I saw the album. Yeah. I said, that I resonated with that. I said that could have been growing up with my father.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, right throughout all of the episodes of the podcast when we talk to people about that personal connection. But, I've got my hairs are sticking up now. It's that sense of that direct contact with history because it's your own family, it's your own connection, isn't it?
Correct. So it's the personal and cultural connections that that matter. And I like, goosebumps too.
Yeah. But Pearson, I mean, so he was on the island as a banker. Just an amateur photographer? He was just taking these out of interest? Or do we know anything about him?
Yeah, well, from my research, what I found out, he was a single man. So, obviously, he had time
on his hands
to do this. And I heard also that he had a motorbike.
Ah, right.
And that's how he got around. Well, I mean, in those days, obviously, road infrastructure was not there. But he could actually move around. So, some of these photographs are on performing arts, very traditional, and they are actually in the mountain areas. So,
right.
So he would have moved around. So I'm only reading by the photographs, and I could tell that, he went to this part of of my region. Yes.
So because he was traveling around then, and you mentioned before that there's a wide variety of styles of images that he's captured, what are some of the things? I mean, you mentioned the plantations before, and I know we want to talk about some of the plantation photography, but what are some of the other things besides just environments? What's he capturing in terms of a snapshot of life on the island at the time?
The snapshot that I see are basically across a traditional modern divide due to colonization. The plantations to me are the physical, visible sort of site that you see that they've opened up land and planted with coconuts. So the plantation I'm talking about is more coconuts. It's copra. And that was the main sort of economy that we had. So that is the first thing. The second major visible identifier for me is the buildings came up, the colonial buildings. That shows like there was an administration here.
Yes, yes.
And there was an old hotel.
And they were here to stay by building solid buildings.
These were solid buildings.
The politics of architecture.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the designs are, we just call it colonial designs because of the way the architecture and the way the structures are done, the structures of the buildings. And there were hotels, there were district offices.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing is like introducing like a new settlement, but with modern things.
Yeah.
We were traditionally building houses in bush materials.
Yes, yes.
So that was the biggest contrast. So people are starting to bridge that now. So for me, I can see when my dad grew up, I live in a permanent house these days at home.
Yeah.
And that is the change that I would like to...
It's within one generation.
Within a generation, that's right. Yeah. And I could see that, these guys... And these old bank vehicles that were driving around, maybe encouraging finance or business. So the striking things is the ecology, which is the landscapes were very, very appealing to me. Performing arts and the culture, they captured a lot of that. So the dancing, the song and dance that are traditional. And the movements of people, like people never really moved around in the past because fear of tribal conflicts or whatever.
Yes.
But one thing colonization did was actually
unite everybody.
Yeah, bridging. So there's some positives. I like, you know, varying views about colonization, but there was some form of bringing people together, because people were, this is my turf, this is my turf, you don't cross the line.
Yeah.
But somehow they, that is one impact.
So that made mobility across the island.
Well, that's the thing I put down, is the mobility, the movements, and the infrastructure.
Yeah.
Like connecting a road from this part to this part was, they were bush tracks, but, you know, yeah, at their own risk.
I mean, we spoke before about sort of capturing everyday life. So what are some of the things that you see, in, you know, as you look for the album, what are some of the things that strike you?
Yeah, what struck me is these gardens of taro. Well, it's very known in the Pacific. Pigeons, they call it talo. You know, big taro plantations, yes, the Polynesians do that. I never see that these days. I mean, in the past, they had like acres of it.
Yes.
So that is how they survived. That was basically their staple diet. They're able to sustain themselves through these massive gardens.
Yeah.
Which is, today is different now because people are buying off the shops and these sort of things. And it's all a different lifestyle now. But that struck me as that was what we call subsistence farming in the old days. The second thing is about protein, or just looking for the top up to the gardens, which is fishing, or livestock. And they kept pigs and chickens and this sort of thing. So that domesticated animals sort of started coming in before that we were hunting them.
Yeah.
So that concept also of, you know, livestock that is domesticated is also something that struck me, that, oh, it's being captured. I'm seeing it. Although I didn't live that in that generation, but I'm seeing that that's been passed on.
Yeah.
And this photograph showed
that time of
change, yeah.
So, yes, Stephen, just taking a look at some of the photos right now, could you describe to our listeners what we're looking at in the album's page right at the moment?
All right. That is down the waterfronts, or down the coastlines. A typical day in a village's life is, you can see people going out fishing, just looking for shells or something for dinner.
Yes.
And that's a typical landscape of land meeting the sea.
Yes.
And those are the sort of things that captures the attention, that the beauty.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I mean, it's they are beautiful photos, but it's so evocative of that sort of cliched, albeit true, view of the South Pacific paradise that you know has permeated popular culture and will embed in our listeners' minds right now. But it's looking at those photos, that's literally what it is, isn't
black it? Black and white, but you can see blue skies, you can see the palm trees. So that's what the South Pacific is like, or the Pacific is known for.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's reflected in any part of the Pacific.
And these landscapes, do they still look similar today in the 21st century, or has there been modern development in these areas?
They're developments for a start, and secondly, they've kind of changed. And this is probably the thrust of what we're trying to do in Pacific Views, is climate change at some stage has forced changes to the landscape. So this would not be the same as seeing it today.
Okay.
As a reference point, it would not.
Yeah. So they serve a really important historical value, sense, and is not just capturing that change culturally, but also that change in terms of environment.
That is correct. So that's a snapshot that we see historically. It has changed today.
Mm.
You wouldn't be seeing the same photograph.
Yeah.
Although we try to reflect the beautiful palm trees, to the clear waters, to the blue skies,
yeah,
you know, that's changed.
Do you get homesick looking at photos like this?
I do.
It's interesting. Again, that personal connection.
Yes.
The other set of photos that we set aside to talk about specifically are these. You know, we're talking for a visual media, but could you describe to our listeners what these photographs represent? Okay.
The bottom right there, I told you about subsistence farming. That was the bloodline, livelihood of the people. That's a taro garden. Now, you don't see massive gardens like this now because people have kind of switched over to modern life. But this strikes me as how my people live. like my father's generation, so I'm kind of close to it because it's 1927. So that is a significant sort of visual that I see, that there's that personal and cultural connections with my people. The performing arts and culture up on the top left, and that shows that whoever the photographer is, this person, was interested also to see how people live, how people perform, how people express themselves. So that is why I thought I'd share that, because it's a quite a balance of colonization to the business, to plantations, but you still maintain and reflect there was a culture.
That continuity of life.
Yes, that has been with generations. So that and it's some dancing that goes on the bottom.
Is it possible to recognize for the photographs what some of the performances are and what some of the ceremonies are?
For performances, I can, since it's not like that's a static sort of image, but I can tell what the performance would be. But we only see it by action, because you cannot tell whether that is what we call a tapia lai song. It cannot, if you only see an image of photography, but it reflects it. I can kind of tell and relate to it.
So obviously you've been spending a lot of time with these albums in preparation for the Pacific Views exhibition. How do you find yourself responding to these images when you see them? I mean, we've talked a little bit about the hairs on standing up moments that we talked about before, but I mean, given you've got all this personal connection as well, how do you find looking at images like this each time you do?
Well, I'm saying priceless, because I'm saying you cannot put something to that. It has so deep rooted in me, personally and culturally, that all these images are big stories to tell. So the storytelling, that's why poetry has come in to express that.
Yes.
And that is something that has always been in our lives.
Yes.
But not in a written form.
Yes.
Because we were oral traditions and we live like that. So the connections and my personal involvement with Pacific Views is that I'm reflecting my people, my heritage, my identity, and the photograph speaks for it, because a lot of people that in my generation wouldn't have seen these photographs. And the idea is to bridge this to the contemporary Pacific Islander, to tell them that, or if they haven't gone back home, this is how your ancestors used to live. So I just wanted to kind of consolidate that, because that's part of the curation that we are doing together with Jude. It's really part of this passion that I have also about the Pacific.
It's a very powerful message about that sense of cultural continuity and about how material culture can help bridge those understandings. And as we talked before about that marrying then with the storytelling and the poetry and that oral tradition, it's really, really exciting.
Mm.
Now, everyone who appears on the podcast gets asked the question, I think you've just answered it anyway with your word priceless, but if you could describe this photographic album in one word, you know, what it means to you, what is that word?
For me, it's a gold mine. It's a gold mine. Anything that's gold is way up there.
Yeah.
So the whole album is a gold mine. So you just have to go out there and dig into the gold mine and get the gold out.
Yeah. So obviously with the exhibition, this is a gold mine in terms of capturing that moment in New Britain.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming that other images and other poems and other albums that are in the exhibition are capturing other parts of the Pacific in the same way.
Well, for me, like I explained earlier, I mean, the Pacific is one people. And in the Tokpisin, which is the pidgin of Melanesia, we call it one solwara. The Pacific is only one ocean. And the ocean, they normally say in political terms that is a small island states. For me, it's one ocean of states that are connected and are one people, regardless of who you are. The Pacific way, Pacific culture lives and survives today.
Thank you, Stephen. I guess the final question I'd like to ask is that when people come in to see Pacific Views, and if they have the opportunity to see these albums specifically, what would you like them to take away? You talked before about that contact or that cultural connectivity for modern Pacifica people living in Australia, but more broadly for anyone who's coming to visit, what's the takeaway from seeing these images that you want people to know and understand?
I want people to take it at heart that contemporary culture as a reference point captured in the histories of these photographs, reflected by the poetry, which is the written expression of normal storytelling of Pacific people, and their music, which is central to the culture of expression. So the takeaway is that we are bridging. We are telling the modern contemporary Pacific Islander that history has a place, whatever the history may have been through colonization, and I call missionization because the missionaries were there too. You know, there are the pros and cons, the good, the bad. What is it today that we can reflect back through Pacific views, that we can take forward a community as a society, so we embrace it.
Thank you, Stephen. That was fascinating. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and sharing these images with us. Pacific Views has just opened, and we encourage people to come and see and enjoy. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
Object Matters is recorded on the grounds of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. The Chow Chak Wing Museum and the University of Sydney pays our respect to the traditional custodians of the lands in which we work.
Subscribe to Object Matters on your favourite podcast app and connect with the Chow Chak Wing Museum on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. You can also subscribe to our monthly e-newsletter, News Extra, via our website, sydney.edu.au/museum.